So with all these great new books out there, let's get started reading.
I was both excited and frightened to think of studying with a stranger, for I was shy around him and found his green gaze disconcerting. I could not see how he would teach me, since we shared no common language, but I joined him dutifully in the schoolroom that opened onto the back garden.
That's a little selection from A Stranger in Alondria. It's a novel that swept this year's Fantasy Awards. It's by a writer named Sophia Samatar. She's Somali by birth, raised in the U.S., and she wrote this book while she was living through a civil war in what is now South Sudan. The main character, the narrator, is a young guy named Jevik. He's the son of a wealthy merchant, and his life is forever changed by the arrival of a mysterious new teacher. Steve Paulson asked Sophia to read some more.
He began by taking me by the wrist and leading me around the room, pointing to things and naming them, signing that I should repeat. When I had learned the names of all the objects in the schoolroom, he took me into the kitchen garden and named the vegetables. If there were plants he did not know, he pointed and raised his gull-gray eyebrows, which meant that he wished to learn the Kideti word. He carried with him always a leather satchel of very fine make, in which he kept another leather object, dyed peacock blue. When he opened it, sheets of rich cotton paper spread out like a fan, some of them marked with minute patterns which he had made himself. The satchel had a narrow pocket sewn to an outside edge, fastened shut with a metal clasp, and set with bits of turquoise. And in this, my new master kept two or three miraculous ink pens, filled only once a day, with which he made marks in his vallon. Whenever I told him a word in our language, he took out his blue leather book, wrote something in it rapidly, and thanked me with a bow. I was puzzled, for though I admired the book as more cunning than our wooden blocks, I could not understand why he wished to keep track of the number of words he had learned.
Oh, that is such a wonderful passage. And one thing that's so fascinating about your story is you're introducing us to the world of books, the wonders that are created by writing, by books that name things, that introduce us to new worlds. But yet, on the other hand, it seems like maybe the act of reading is removing us to some degree from the actual experience of the world, of the world that Jevik grew up in, in his oral culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, as much as it's a novel about reading, it's also a novel about exile. I mean, there's Jevik's tutor who has left his home and is experiencing exile. And then there's Jevik's own journey to Alondria and that experience of change, which involves loss. And I suppose there's a way in which, the book draws a parallel between those things, that reading, to be absorbed in a book is to be in a different place and to be in a different space. And there can be, feelings of loss when a book ends and also feelings of maybe having lost some actual experiences that you might have had in the world because you were reading.
Now, to add to the paradox here, it turns out that writing in this new land of Alondria can be a tool of oppression. It can be something that supports the military and the ruling class.
Yes, and that's true of our world too. This is something that became sort of a preoccupation of mine as I was writing the book, because I was working, and this was my first, the first time that I'd had sort of a full-time job for more than a year, and I was teaching English in a high school in South Sudan. And this seems like a great thing to do, and I think that in many ways it was a great thing to do. But the place I was working in was operating almost entirely in an oral mode. There was very little reading material, and the vast majority of people did not read. And so not only was I teaching people to read and write, teaching them to read and write English, a different language, and so I really started asking myself questions about what I was contributing to You know, we hear about language death. We know English is a global language and everybody wants to have it, but there are things that are lost along that path.
Did you ever feel like you were maybe working in the language of cultural imperialism there, that there might have been something wrong with
sure,
trying to
absolutely.
You know, teach these kids English?
Absolutely. Yeah. Although, you know, my students passionately wanted to learn it as, you know, of course, you know, it was a gateway to many things, especially also because I was working in an area of Sudan. This was still during that civil war that was going on at the time.
Well, you were teaching in a high school during a civil war?
Yes, but in a place that was very far from the front. I mean, from areas of, obviously you can't run a school in a place where there's active conflict. It was under the control of the SPLA, the rebel group, and not of the Khartoum government. And so my students had begun their education in Arabic and were now switching to English in order to make closer connections with their neighbors in Uganda and Kenya.
Did it ever get dicey for you? I mean, given these warring allegiances?
We were evacuated one time in the 3 years that we were there. So that was one time when it was dicey. And then there was another time when our school was closed because there was a general conscription. This was actually a conscription into the SPLA. And our school, we had 300 students, and about 30 of them were young women. So it was almost all young men. And so we had to close for a time.
How old were the boys when they were conscripted?
The average age of a student in our school was 21. Their education had been disrupted in most cases. Either they had been away, they had been in refugee camps, mostly in Congo, or some of them had been soldiers as well, had been child soldiers.
This must have made all this very real to you. I mean, coming back to this notion that, you know, you're writing a book of fantasy here, but to some degree, it's based in a war experience. And you're writing about that, too. I mean, there are these warring factions in your novel.
There are. And there's also, I mean, the ghost who comes to haunt Jevik is the ghost of someone who died far too young, who died as a teenager. And that was an idea that was very present to me in working with those students, and also because I was 26. I wasn't very old either.
Now, you talked about your own experience of working on this book, and you wrote it for a long time. Were you actually writing back when you were teaching in South Sudan?
Yes, that's where I wrote the first draft.
So, I mean, so you were writing during a time of war?
Yes.
Was it hard to focus on what you were doing?
No. I think in a lot of ways it was a refuge. You know, so I wanted to go to this other space every day.
That's Sophia Samatar talking with Steve Paulson. She was born in Somalia and raised in the U.S., and she's lived and taught in both the Sudan and Egypt. They were talking about her novel, A Stranger in Olandria, which won the World Fantasy Award for Best Novel this year.